to the Pitched Industries podcast.
Hey guys, what's going on? And welcome back to another episode of the Pitched Industries podcast. My name's Nick White, and this is where I sit down and have conversations with some of today's most influential creatives and ask them about how they've gotten to where they are today, things they've learned and experienced from their journey so far, advice they'd give aspiring creatives and students now, as well as a whole heap of other stuff. On this episode, I'm excited to be talking with Noah Witzel, who was the winner in the Raw category in the 2019 Red Bull Alum Image Quest. Noah has been shooting photographs for quite a long time now and has built up an impressive client list, including Patagonia, Native, Free Skier, as well as a whole heap of editorials like Powder Magazine, In the Snow, Trail Runner, and just the list goes on and on. In today's episode, Noah will be talking to you in depth about how he was able to capture his award-winning image through using a double exposure, which I'm sure to those of you who don't know much about this photography technique will find super interesting and insightful. We also discuss how he was able to make the transition from doing photography part-time to full-time, challenges he's faced in the past, the best advice he's ever received, as well as a whole heap of other stuff I'm sure you're going to find very interesting. So be sure to check out the image on the Pitched Industries or Red Bull Alum Instagram pages if you haven't seen it. But otherwise, let's get straight into this conversation with Noah Witzel. Noah, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for taking the time to be here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nick. I'm really excited.
Before we jump into the formal interview, I suppose, I just want to shoot you through a few short and sharp questions just to sort of let the audience better get to know you. Are you all good with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet, man. So where do you currently call home?
I split my time between Salt Lake City, Utah, and then Steamboat Springs, Colorado. I grew up in Wisconsin and then graduated from high school, moved out to Steamboat. Went to school there, got my associates, and then moved out to Salt Lake. And, you know, yeah, over the last 12 or 13 years, I've just kind of, and really specifically the last like 4 years that I've been 100% self-employed, I've, you know, started to just split time almost equally in both locations at all times.
Whose work do you admire the most currently?
Oh man. So there's definitely a couple questions that I wouldn't say threw me off, but you know, I'm kind of interesting in that aspect where I think I follow a decent amount of photographers, but I definitely follow a wide genre of photography, and there's kind of nobody in particular that I would say like, you know, as the main inspiration or, you know, anything like that. I just kind of follow a bunch and appreciate it all. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, what's a favorite quote of yours that comes to mind?
As far as that goes, I mean, the only thing that I remind myself lately is just the statement, progress over perfection. I heard it, you know, I think this past year, and it's just, I think all of us, you know, compare ourselves to other people so much. And it's definitely one of those things that you can kind of lose sight of the goal pretty easily if you're focused on perfection and kind of running that statement through my head, always just like, okay, just keep on moving forward. Don't worry about it. Just make progress, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So what, you consider yourself to be quite a perfectionist with your work? Is that something that you constantly struggle with?
Definitely. Yeah, I'm my own worst critic, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, me too.
Yeah, it's horrible, man. I'm pretty, my boss can be a real dick sometimes. me.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, what's your favorite thing to do in your own time?
You know, I'd have to say photography. I mean, or, you know, like backpacking and skiing, given the fact that it's just interesting, you know, when you have a number of different passions, and currently photography is just kind of taking over everything, you know. So it's kind of interesting when people are like, you need to take days off. And so it's like, well, yeah, the first thing I'd want to do though is pick up my camera.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely like skiing and backpacking besides that.
What's a book that you would recommend to our audience?
There's definitely a few in mind, but the one I wrote down was The Power of Now. I read it a couple of years ago and kind of changed my whole, you know, outlook on life. So, about being present, and yeah, it just kind of helps identify how much your mind is always part of every situation, you know?
Yeah, for sure. The last one now, and that is, if you could drink a beer and have a conversation with anyone in the entire world, past or present, who would that person be? And I reckon, what would you be drinking?
Oh, man, this is another hard one. I didn't write anything down for this one. I could probably think of a lot of different people, but Abraham Lincoln is the only one that comes to mind. So. Oh, probably not the best one there, but I could think of probably a million other people there. But.
Yeah, for sure. Well, now we've jumped through those short and sharp questions. I suppose it would make sense for us to really start off from the beginning with your photography journey. Can you talk to us a little bit about where that journey started for you, and maybe just tell us all a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I grew up in Wisconsin and kind of picked up my first camera when I was like 12 or 13. My older brother purchased one, and, you know, I saved up my money as well. And yeah, kind of had a little intro there. The main thing though is I kind of started skiing. I got into skiing when I was 14, like right when I started high school, and I started filming my friends. And I think it was in that period of high school where I was more so filming and kind of starting to shape my eye that helped develop, you know, more of an interest in photography.
Yeah.
And it definitely, you know, definitely goes down the line from there. But then when I moved out to Steamboat in 2005, after graduating high school, I spent 2 years there and eventually sold all my video equipment and invested in my first like DSLR set up. And really from about 2007, I've been kind of pursuing it more full speed, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. So you started out shooting videos and then moved to stills. What was the next step for you?
Yeah, so I actually started a clothing company many, many years ago called Lightpole. And for me, it was always just a hustle, you know, to try to get to the point where I was self-employed and doing something I loved looking back. But kind of through that process, I kind of started to shoot more to promote that brand, that company that I had started via social media, also taking pictures of the clothing for the website, and, you know, basically just trying to gain followers that way. And then over the years, I started shooting more and more action stuff, and probably around 2000. Like my first published image was in 2008.
Okay.
But it really wasn't until about 2014, kind of in that area, 2013, that I was really kind of starting to pick up more and more jobs.
Yeah. Because doing my research on you before this conversation, it's pretty clear that you have a pretty amazing work ethic, because I understand you've worked really quite hard to get to a point where you can kind of make that leap into being your own boss and being a freelance photographer, I suppose. What worried you about making that transition, or what made you wait so long to kind of drop everything and jump into your photography full time?
Yeah, that's a good question. For me, I remember this conversation I had with another fellow photographer in Salt Lake. And I remember we were driving up to Jackson Hole, and, you know, he was driving like a pretty brand new, you know, Subaru. And I just remember asking him, like, how do you make it? Like, you know, that's a lot of photos you have to sell to break even, much less buy new equipment that's constantly breaking, much less put away enough money, you know, to save money at the end of the day. So it's pretty wild, you know, 5 years later, being in the position I am with a lot of steady work, and I'm, you know, starting to kind of narrow down what I love doing, you know, taking the jobs I love to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. I mean, from having that conversation 5 years ago to being where you are now, getting constant work that you love, that's actually, yeah, really quite incredible.
Yeah. And I would say that, like, you know, throughout the years, I was working at a private golf club in Steamboat, and I was an assistant professional there and debated going into the golf industry. I mean, like, so many times. So many times I was so close to enrolling in the PGM, professional golf management program, and, you know, to pursue being a head professional or a general manager at some private club somewhere. And then in the wintertime, I managed a ski shop in Alta, Utah, but it was definitely very, very difficult in those years. I mean, man,
long hours.
Just working 80, 90, 100 hours a week, you know, working 40 to 50 at the golf course or ski shop, and then, you know, trying to come home super exhausted between everything else and kind of give the equal amount to my growing business. You know, and for me over the years, it kind of, you know, it started off with this question of like, how do you do this? And it turned in from one licensing situation to, you know, working event jobs, event photography at the club, to slowly picking up a few more, you know, publications and editorial, like editorial publications and stuff like that. So
yeah,
eventually I just got that train going fast enough where I could kind of hop on it. And for me, you know, I definitely think I hopped on it at the right time. I don't think I was early or late. You know, a lot of people kind of think that you just wake up one day and you're like, I'm going to make the change and I'm confident and I just need to go drop, you know, like it is. I don't know. Maybe it is like that for some people, because I think some people like do have that story. Yeah. But for me, I remember one summer going back to the course and I was like, I'm going to work part-time, you know, I'm going to work part-time at the golf course. And after like 2-3 weeks to start the season, I'm like, it's not quite there yet. You just got to grind yourself into a pulp for one more year.
How old were you at this stage?
I mean, this was only 2015 was my last summer of before I went self-employed.
Yeah. Cool.
So yeah, this is like the fourth year.
Yeah.
But after that, like in 2016, you know, 2016 would have been like my first self-employed year, summer year. And it jumped into that full bore. And I never, you know, I definitely never struggled with work. I've always just had a lot on my plate and continue to create way too much work for myself.
Yeah. Hey, well, that's good, man. Did you study photography at all, or were you mainly self-taught?
Self-taught, 100%. I've definitely had some, you know, mentors, some other photographers in my life that I've been able to like pick their brain and ask them questions. But to be honest, it's more so been like the business aspect where my questions have kind of, you know, evolved around.
Yeah. And what questions were they?
You know, there's just no set rule book on how to communicate with people and how to get into magazines and how to get published. And over the years, you quickly find out that it's just being present, and it's word of mouth, and word of mouth spreads and spreads and spreads and spreads. But yeah, just continuing to knock on that door. And for me, you know, it was also shooting a lot of different stuff. You know, a lot of people feel like a lot of photographers will say, oh yeah, like stick to your look, the look of your imagery.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of thrown myself into the fire in a lot of different things. And it's proved to be very, very helpful. For example, like shooting an event at the club where your gut feeling tells you, hey, these people they're very well off and they have money to buy artwork. But also shooting it because it's an easy job, but you touch base and you meet people that way. And if you don't have that vision to be able to see that you know, the 50 people that own three different houses across the country aren't going to be possible clients down the road. I mean, you definitely have to change your thinking on that, because I've definitely gained some clients and artwork sales from, you know, the most kind of random jobs. That's put me in a position now to accept more so jobs that I want.
Yeah, yeah, that's really interesting, because a lot of the people who have come on this show in the past have kind of spoken about creating a style and creating something that's unique and, you know, really sticking to that. So it's really interesting hearing you say almost the opposite, with really finding your market or expanding your skill set in other areas so you can really open up other doors with your photography to see where they may lead.
Yeah, I mean, because like, you just never know where a situation is going to lead. Especially photography is just a lot of it's connection based. So the more connections you have, if you're not burning the bridge, gives you so much of an upper hand compared to, you know, digital marketing or however you may be kind of looking at doing something.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. And that is something which I'd like to cover a little bit more moving forward with the chat. But for now, I firstly would like to congratulate you on your massive win in last year's Red Bull Alum Image Quest in the RAW category. It's an incredible image, and I'm really excited to hear you talk to us a little bit now about how you were able to capture that image, as well as maybe just describe it to the people who might not have had the chance to see the image yet.
First off, thank you, Nick. That definitely sounds good to hear that repeated, because I'm, you know, pretty excited about that. Most things really don't excite me too much these days. But when I heard that I was a finalist, it brought tears to my eyes. You know, it's definitely a very, very important to me as well. But the shot that I captured that won the RAW category was an eclipse image, the total solar eclipse of August 21st, 2017. And it was captured in Teton Valley, Wyoming. But it was a mountain bike eclipse shot during totality. The biker is kind of airing over a log and a lot of complex lighting and a lot of different things going on with that shot. To pull it off. Yeah. Three wireless strobes positioned behind the trees to backlight the rider and the feature to make it look as if the eclipse was lighting it.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the most unique images I've seen. And I definitely had to look at it for quite a while just to kind of figure out how that hadn't been edited at all.
Yeah. I had a feeling when I sent it in that, you know, right away when they created that RAW category, I was like, man, what can I submit that would be a good RAW image? And that image came to mind right away. But I was like, I need to take a look at the image, because I think the file that's straight out of the camera is like really, really good unless it's too dark. So I went back to Lightroom and I looked at the original import settings, and I'm like, man, this thing definitely has a chance to win this thing, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So can you tell us a little bit now about how you really planned the image and how you were able to make the whole thing happen?
Yeah, so like I said, I originally found out probably in June or early July that the total solar eclipse was going to be crossing very, very nearby. And me being in Colorado at that point, where the totality was supposed to be set at right around 99% totality.
So totality is the moon coming.
Yeah. So it's the amount of the sun that like the moon is covering, you know, so 100% totality is where it's, you know, completely covered, and you get that beautiful like diamond ring around the moon. But the difference between 99% totality, which it was in Steamboat, and 100% is literally night and day. At 99%, you can't look at the sun without just getting your eyes blasted. At 100%, you can take off the glasses and stare at it, and it's like the most magical thing. So like with that said, I kind of did some research and was like, okay, I need to go somewhere. Where can I go? And there was definitely the initial thought of like, okay, I have an opportunity to capture something very, very special. It'd be cool to shoot it in one shot, such as like nothing else around it, just a shot of the eclipse.
Yeah.
But if I could combine mountain biking with it or some other form of activity to make it more dynamic, like that would be obviously like a much better goal to have.
Mm.
So yeah, I started kind of conceptualizing and drawing out sketches and trying to figure out how to do this. Like one of the biggest issues, because mountain biking came to mind right away, and there's a number of different spots that I could have gone, but boiling it down, I eventually chose Teton Valley because my friend Chris Brule had just moved up there. The Grand Teton was up there, so perhaps, which is a very, very iconic mountain. And I was like, okay, maybe I can combine kind of all of these elements into an image. If not, like I'll at least have the location where totality will be.
Yeah.
So yeah, I started conceptualizing and drawing out stuff and trying to figure out how to capture it. One of the main issues with capturing the eclipse was the fact that totality occurred at like 11:41 or something like that in the morning. It was like 11:20 or 11:40. Regardless, I mean, it is straight ahead, straight above you. You know, there's no hiding that. So in order to kind of portray the magic of an eclipse, you have to compress the image somehow. You have to zoom in. You have to have, you know, 120 millimeters or 200 millimeters. You have to have some sort of compression on that image to kind of, to do it any justice.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things I kind of debated was, okay, like, and I thought of everything. I'm like, okay, if I could find some deep canyon where I could be down in like a river canyon and have some biker jumping this canyon, I could potentially zoom in on the athlete and capture it that way. And maybe I could use flashes, but the likelihood of finding that is like just so, so impossible, you know?
Yeah.
So basically after a lot of thinking, I kind of knew it was going to be impossible to capture the eclipse during totality and compress it with a biker. And that's kind of when the idea of a double exposure came to mind.
Yeah.
You know, I'd definitely seen some pretty crazy images over the years that people have done, but this would definitely be a way to capture the image and then pursue like the second image as far as the mountain biking shot. But, you know, so a double exposure, you know, these days and in the past, they used to do it with film photography. And, you know, to my knowledge, you could shoot your roll of film and then reload it and then shoot over it. Or you could do it in the dark room as well.
Yeah.
Nowadays, digital cameras, some of them at least, I think a lot of them can do it in camera. And it's you know, it's kind of this weird process of whatever data is black or in the first image will be replaced with the data in the second photo, or whatever data is white, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's like,
yep.
It's very, very kind of like hard to understand. You just kind of have to go out and shoot to try and figure it out.
Yeah.
But after playing around with it in the past and multiple weeks of kind of thinking on it, I came up with this idea that I thought would work as far as capturing the first image, shooting totality and, you know, focusing my camera skyward and compressing it with like a 200 millimeter lens for the first shot, and then pursuing a second shot at like 9 PM when I usually take most of my flashed wireless shots.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically matching the light of totality, because it is it is dark. I mean, it is 100%. You can see stars during totality, which is, I mean, it was just the craziest experience in general. And here's the thing too. There was only 2 minutes and 20 seconds of totality or something like that. So it's in, so there's not much time. So I didn't want to do that to the athletes as well and try to shoot during totality because we might miss the only opportunity we've ever had to witness something that magical, you know? And I knew if I could capture it in one shot during the eclipse.
Yeah.
But it just wouldn't do it justice because if the eclipse is straight overhead, I'd have to shoot with a wide angle lens. And in the photos, it's going to look like a tiny, tiny, like the tip of your pinky finger extended all the way, you know, far away from your head. It's not going to do it justice at all.
For sure.
So, I mean, essentially like came up with a plan and then loaded the vehicle and drove up there. The rumors heading into the eclipse were pretty wild. The fact that Jackson area was just going to get so overrun with people that, people are like, bring extra food, bring extra water, bring gas, gas stations are going to run out. The roads are going to be completely locked up. So it's kind of like going into Armageddon, Armageddon situation, doomsday, like loading up the vehicle and stuff like that. But yeah, got up to Teton Valley and linked up with my good friends, Chris Brule and Evan Drott. And we scouted for a couple of days looking for a very, very specific shot, like spot, because I knew I needed to get the rider above the horizon to have a better chance at the data being retained in the image. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't be somewhat see-through if I did have to take an exposure on the second shot. There wouldn't be any brush or tree branches and stuff in the way. So like, it's kind of looking for a very, very specific spot. And after a couple of days of scouting, found a spot that worked, and from there was just kind of setting up base camp and getting everything dialed. And the morning of, loaded up the packs with, man, I had all the camera gear, a couple different cameras, a couple different tripods, light stands, a computer to check the files. I'll go over that in a second. Yeah. And then, all sorts of stuff to kind of be out there all day long, along with like 2 Magnum bottles of champagne, if in case we did get it, one after the eclipse, after totality, and then one hopefully to celebrate after we had captured the shot at 9 p.m. So leading up to totality, it's very, very nerve-wracking, and essentially to boil the shot down and give you all at least the secret of the shot. I had a couple different cameras going and one of them didn't even matter because I was just shooting like a time lapse. I was just shooting the eclipse just to shoot it, kind of a tighter shot. But the main camera that I planned on doing the double exposure with, I had it aimed up. So I positioned the eclipse during totality in the right kind of upper third corner. And I knew exactly where I wanted to position it. And I knew exactly how I wanted to light it and how I could potentially pull that off. So essentially leading up to the moment of totality, it was definitely a little bit, there's a lot of anticipation on that moment.
Yeah.
But getting the settings dialed and making sure my focus was taped off and not moving around. Mm. But, leading up to it, all of a sudden the temperature drops by like 10, 15 degrees. The birds stop chirping, insects stop, chirping, and this kind of weird light and smell was kind of in the air. And then totality hit, and it was just like one of the most crazy experiences like you can ever imagine. Have you ever witnessed one?
No, I haven't. I really hope to one day, though.
Make it a priority. It does not disappoint.
But
just to be up there with everybody, and there's a number of different groups on that hillside that you're just like, hooting and hollering and, just pretty crazy seeing it go from sunny to just completely dark and stars coming out. It was just such a wild, wild experience. But basically, after that, celebrated, had champagne. And then after that, it was basically, you know, waiting on the side of the hillside, getting the feature ready, trying to sleep on a 30-degree slope underneath trees. But also, I had my computer up there to analyze the images. So with a double exposure, there's a couple things like your ISO and I believe your aperture have to be the same, and the camera, you know, so you can't swap cards. So that obviously made it very, very confusing. And I knew that ahead of time too. So therefore during the eclipse, during the moment of totality, I'm cranking through that 2 minutes and 20 seconds. I'm changing the ISO from 800 to 1200 to 1600 to 2500. Just because I knew that most of my twilight shots, which would be the second shot, I shoot around, you know, 1200, 1600 ISO. So give myself options. So I imported those photos, looked at the settings to double check like sharpness, but didn't delete them from my card. Made a checklist, made a note, you know, on a notepad, wrote down like kind of 10 different options of what I could go with, so that when the pressure was on for that second shot, if anything went wrong, I could reference that sheet and instantly be able to know which one I can select and yada, yada, yada. So yeah, we sat around the hillside trying to sleep underneath the midday sun, and then, you know, come around 8 p.m., a beautiful sunset out a little bit later than that, but started to basically set up the flashes. I never even moved once, one behind the right group of trees, set of trees, one behind the feature, the log, and then one behind the left group of trees. And so then I go to take the first test shot, right? And a lot of these shots, there's only a 15-minute window of time. Go to take the first test shot, flash doesn't fire. And then from there, it's just, I mean, it's the most stressful, frustrating, challenging, demoralizing situation that I've kind of ever been a part of. Running, sprinting back and forth and trying to figure out a way to kind of override this issue and trying remotes and plugging it into my camera to kind of, because I realized essentially that the hot shoe was damaged on my camera from filming fly fishing a couple weeks prior. Okay. So I'd taken a fall, dunked the camera, sent it into Canon. They're like, it's going to be $1,200 to fix. I'm like, well, I'm not going to get it fixed because the camera still works. Well, here's a lesson. Always double, triple check to make sure everything works. But I never like had any issues with my transmitter, my flash just not firing. So I never even thought to think of it. If I would have known that, I just would have shot it on a different camera. But now I can't swap cards because I've committed to shooting the first shot with my 5D Mark III. But basically just sprinting back and forth to try and figure it out. And, you know, basically like, man, I just wasted these guys' time. They've been up here all day just for such a simple little error.
All the athletes are waiting around.
And they, they were quiet. They didn't say a word to me. They knew I was holding back tears. I was like just so disappointed in myself. But it kept on getting darker and darker and darker. And I wanted to give up so bad, but like, I just kept on saying, like, keep on brainstorming. It's not completely over until it's completely dark. And that's when I remembered what I call the poor man's wireless flash, which is how I used to shoot flashed imagery, like off-camera flash stuff, which is you have to have the camera on a tripod and the exposure has to be long enough, let's say a 5-minute exposure, where you can then go off-camera, you start taking the photo, then you go off camera and then you have the skier, the biker come through the frame in the last like 10 seconds of the frame. And then you manually fire the flash, having the skier or biker come through in the last 10 seconds of the exposure so that light isn't absorbed behind the skier or mountain biker to make it look like they're see-through, you know? So kind of taking all things into effect. So basically I just kind of reach up to them like, okay, I think there might be a way for us to pull this off if you guys are willing to hit it. But it was so dark at that point. And yeah, I mean,
wow. You know, so, it's a long story, so you were shooting with, say, like a 4 second exposure, and then you were hitting the shutter, waiting like 3 seconds, and then timing the person on the bike to hit the jump within the last few milliseconds of that exposure.
Yeah. So I'm there, you know, 50 yards or 40 yards or whatever it was away from them. They're behind the trees. It's really dark. Finally, they agree to hit it.
Yeah.
And one of them agrees to hit it. And I'm like, nice. If one of them agrees.
In the complete dark.
Yeah, like if Blake agrees, and that's a whole different part of the story, but if Blake agrees, I know Chris and Evan will probably step up to the plate too.
Yeah.
And that's why it's always better to have three in a session as compared to two. You know, but yeah, not to get into that because that's another layer of the story. But yeah, they agreed to hit it.
Yeah.
And luckily they had hit the feature so many times throughout the day that they had kind of muscle memory on the impact.
Yeah.
So they were able to, they were said they were going to hit it one time, and they probably each ended up hitting it, you know, five times each. And Chris's last hit on the feature was the shot.
Wow. That's incredible. And yeah, kudos to them for hitting that ramp, not only in the dark, but then having a flash go off in your face when you're mid flight.
and that's what I was going to say too. So essentially, yeah, I knew I had to take like at least a second long exposure, because I needed at least a second of kind of forgiveness on either end to press the timer when they're ready to drop, and then also have enough, you know, to time that second out at least to where they'd be in the air. So the eventual, you know, the final shot was like, I think, yeah, 3.2 seconds, but also trying to time their drop in so that I'm flashing it as close to the end of the frame as possible, so they're not like somewhat see-through.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Wow, man. Well, yeah, that is quite an incredible story behind that image, because, yeah, it really is an amazing image, and I highly recommend everyone who's listening to this now to check it out, now knowing how it was captured. And I'm sure that's probably going to inspire a few people to try and do something a little bit similar.
Yeah, we were up there on the, you know, the side of that mountain for 16 hours or something that day, and you know, went from complete devastation and like utter loss. Like we're not going to even have a photo to even prove that we were close to something special. You know, we have nothing. And then to like 10 minutes later, just like, wait, I think we got something, guys. Let's pop that champagne and pack up the equipment and hike out of here, you know?
Yeah. It's a pretty awesome story, man. So have you submitted to the Red Bull Alum Image Quest a few times in the past? And what did it really mean to have won this award in front of the incredible people that would have been at the award ceremony that night?
Like I said earlier, these days I really don't get excited too much, just because you kind of, before you get that recognition, you know, you've already kind of been at that point for a couple of years, you know? So, but yeah, with that specifically, I mean, it really, really meant a lot. I actually had to go back and check just to see if I submitted in 2016, which I did. Because that's what I thought. I'm like, I'm pretty sure, like, I've known about this for a while. And it's like very, very important.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's the most prestigious photography contest for adventure and action sports imagery.
Absolutely.
And I mean, everybody is submitting images to try and get into that. All the people that I look up to that are my fellow peers in the area and also in the industry that I don't know are all submitting to get in. And to me, just to be named a semifinalist is 100% very honorable, much less a finalist, you know, much less walking away with a loom. So, you know, to be there surrounded by that many creative and unique and inspired individuals is, you know, there's really no words that can sum up that experience.
Yeah.
Just very, very, very thankful, you know, very, very thankful that I can go experience that, you know. And the coolest part about it too is like all these people they're just great humans. This is just yet another situation where you're like, all right, well, now I have another 50 people that I can reach out to that are around the world, you know, that hey, you want to go link up in Cape Town, like I'm gonna fly out there. So it's just that situation.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, all of the videos and photos I saw from the night all looked incredible. So congratulations again. And it's an incredible image and very worthy of the win, I think. But I do want to move forward a little bit now and ask you a few more questions that I ask a lot of the guests that come on this show. And the first is my favorite of the bunch, and that is, what's the most influential piece of advice that you've been given in the past?
For me, it's just kind of like the generalization of persistence. You know, everyone that I look up to and in a lot of the podcast interviews and stuff that I listen to, from Nat Geo guys and gals to the other photographers I follow, like the one thing that always pops up is persistence. Just like, just keep on doing it. You know, like so many people saying like, yeah, I was told to quit when I went in and showed my portfolio the first time, and you know, that I wasn't good at all. And 20 years later, look where I am now. I'm actually working for that client that turned me down and they don't even know.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, if you start playing the piano right now, and let's say you only play for 30 minutes a week, you're going to suck for a while.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, yeah. But you do it for 20 years, 30 years, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, like, you're going to be pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, if you play the piano for 20, 30 years, no matter how much or little you play a week. So, you know, yeah, definitely for me, it's a persistence thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, I'd completely agree. And definitely along with the persistence, I suppose, is the knowledge that you get from just trying, like the poor man's flash or whatever you called it. I mean, like learning those skills, you know, it comes with the time and putting the effort in, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think especially when you're kind of starting out, even though you might want to shoot like one specific field, I really, really think it's important to shoot a wide variety of stuff, because when you throw yourself into the fire, you're forced to learn. And even weddings and action sports imagery are 100% comparable in my mind.
Okay.
And also architectural imagery compared to action imagery. The other night, I'm out there shooting a flash image of a skier hitting a jump and airing up into the canopy of the aspens. And I'm looking at the aspen trees going, here are my lines on the right and left. I don't want them to be distorted. I want those lines to be straight.
Yeah.
And if I wouldn't have shot architectural photography a little bit, that completely changed an aspect of how I look at shots, you know, where sometimes you start to see more lines that come out. So it's, yeah, definitely one of those situations where you just try to shoot a lot of different stuff, and also shooting with different people. You know, when I surround myself around other photographers, they see in a completely different way than I do. And the last 3 years I've shot the Trans BC Enduro, which is a 6-day mountain bike, like basically just a crazy downhill race that goes kind of around Canada. But there's multiple other photographers that are on that week-long trip, you know, that are part of the staff. And it's funny, we'll go out and shoot one exact spot together and we'll have completely different looking images, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just a testament to, like, you know, don't try to hide your stuff too much, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So what's something that you feel you've really struggled with in the past, and how have you managed to overcome it or work through it?
Oh, man, I mean, there's a ton. Creating time for myself and stepping away from the lens, which is very, very important. But like I said earlier, it's like the first thing I want to do when I'm quote unquote taking time for myself is pick up my camera, which makes it tough. But, you know, another big one that kind of stands out to me is just comparison. I mean, it is, you're always just comparing yourself to, you know, how much work you're getting done, what other jobs you think you deserve, and another photographer who you don't think their work is as good as yours in that specific genre is getting, you know. And and all these sorts of things. So just kind of typical life stuff, but like, you know, comparison and jealousy and, you know, I think this is very, very important to keep your head down and just keep on moving forward, you know, kind of relentless forward pursuit, you know, and if you're doing it long enough, like your work will be recognized.
Really comparing yourself to other people and their work is something that's come up a lot in this podcast in the past episodes, but it is always interesting hearing from people about how they deal with these feelings. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you minimize the effect that this might have on your work and career, I suppose?
Lately, I'm trying to become more efficient in that manner, and I'm trying to approach shooting in a more efficient manner.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm just trying not to have FOMO, like the fear of missing out.
Yeah.
Because it's always there, you know, so be 100% present. If I go to shoot and there's a crap sunset or whatever it is, the conditions aren't the best, or maybe they're the great, like whatever it is, I'm there to shoot and make the best out of it.
Yeah.
But when I put my camera down, it's like, no matter how good the sunset gets, no matter what is happening, it's like, don't even think about it, because now you're defeating the whole purpose of kind of like that recharging.
Yeah, yeah. That's something personally that I've really struggled with. And yeah, it does seem like always whenever the sunset's the best or the conditions are awesome, that's always when you don't have your camera.
The other night, for example, we go skin up this mountain, bunch of big lighting equipment. And the original idea was to shoot like a twilight flashed ski shot.
Yeah.
But then the storm kind of miraculously cleared. And we're like, man, we could just get some amazing light at sunset, but I would hate to skin all the way up there without the flashes and then get skunked from the sunset and get nothing, you know? So I drag up the flashes and we get up into a position where we can ski down this ridgeline on one side that gets lit up with the sun, or we can go literally like 100 feet on the other side into the shadows and start setting up the lights and do whatever. Well, I made the executive decision to basically call it on the sunset, like, hey, it's just not going to happen. And if I wait here too long and try to do both or sit on the fence, like I'm going to miss setting up the lighting the way I need to.
Yeah, yeah.
So I set up the lighting and, you know, 10, 15 minutes later, just all we can see is above the tree is just the sunset just blowing up. And we're down there in the trees setting up the flashes, like, oh man, like, well, now we can't get to it. We're missing out on this. And then, like, which is very, very rare because I do a lot of like wireless flash photography, and I pretty much almost every time get something good. When I go out with an athlete, we didn't get anything good.
Oh, no.
So it's pretty, like, very, very ironic of just like how many times I've like tried to put myself in that position to just get a beautiful skiing sunset image.
Yeah.
And then actually when I was in position to get that shot and when all the conditions, the snow, the light were in line, I chose to go 100 feet down the ridge line and set up a flash shot that didn't work out. But it's like one of those things, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
This is just going to happen. You know, like you get a handful of really great shots a year. Like,
yeah.
The other 100 times you're out there, or the other 50 times you're out there getting, you're learning the other 50 times.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, for sure. And old Murphy's law always will happen, hey?
Yeah, just so hilarious, though.
That's cool, man. Well, look, this has been awesome. But before we wrap up today, I'm pretty interested to ask, where do you want to go with your photography moving forward? Are there any ideas or issues that you're looking to explore?
You know, for me, going forward, it's the business aspect of it is always so involved. So that's 95% of it. I mean, people always think you're out living the life, and what they don't know is that like 20 of those photos that they saw during the month on your social media were captured in 2 days.
Mm.
And the other 28 days you're on the computer, you know? So that's always like a huge issue, and I'm always trying to make my business more efficient. So like this past summer, I was just trying to really rebrand everything and work on the organizational aspects to make things more efficient to allow me to go out and shoot more. But that's always kind of a constant goal of mine.
Yeah.
But besides that, it's definitely to learn, you know, new kind of techniques of photography. I would love to start doing more cinematography. I mean, I really appreciate the story that you can tell within cinematography, and then combined with writing. I mean, there's just so many creative elements there that are very, very interesting to me. And I would love to start like passion projects, trying to tell stories in a different way. And whether that be, you know, kind of documentaries and stuff like that.
Yeah, man. Well, that sounds super interesting. And I'm very, very excited and intrigued to see where you go moving forward with your photography and moving into videos. But I do want to take this moment now to let the audience know that I'll have links to everything that me and Noah have spoken about today over at pitchedindustries.com. But Noah, are there any places you'd like the audience to go to keep up to date with what you're up to and really see more of your work?
Well, I think the main way that they can kind of check out my work is by just going to my website, which is www.noahdavidwetzel.com, W-E-T-Z-E-L.com.
Yep.
So, yeah, you'll see most of my work. I spent the last 6 months kind of picking away, updating the website, and then also on Instagram. That's probably Instagram, Facebook, but Instagram is just at Noah Wetzel, and you'll be able to see kind of, you know, behind the scenes stuff and goofy sort of stuff. And, you know, my latest work for the most part. So
awesome, man. Well, I'll have all of those links in the show notes below, as well as on the Pitched Industries website. But I just want to say, Noah, congratulations again on winning the Red Bull Illum Image Quest contest. It was an incredible image, and thanks for giving us so much insight into how you were able to capture it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Nick. Yeah, I couldn't be more excited about the Illum. And now I just need to get back to work so I can get back there in 2021.
Yeah, for sure. So that's just about it for today, guys. Thank you, like always, for listening, and I hope you're able to take away a few things from our conversation today. If you haven't already, could you please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, as well as head over to the Pitched Industries Instagram feed and website to subscribe and just keep up to date with a whole heap of new content that's going to be coming out very soon. Also, definitely check out Red Bull Illum's Instagram page and website, as they're constantly updating it with awesome content that I'm sure you guys will find really interesting and get a lot out of. So anyway, until next week, guys, I hope you have an awesome week, and I will talk to you shortly. Cheers.